This is the RCR, the Retro Computing Roundtable, Show 20, recorded Saturday, December 17th. But no matter where I go, there's one thing I'd like to know. Will I ever find my way back to Oz? We're the guys who talk about computer history news and nostalgia, because we're computer historians, hobbyists, and collectors ourselves. I'm your host this show, and I'm Earl Evans in Portland, Oregon. I'm also the originator of the RetroBits podcast. With me is, first off, Carrington Vanston in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. He hosts 1 Megahertz, the Apple II podcast, and co-hosts the Double Take podcast. And he wants that $2 that you owe him.
I do, Earl.
How you doing, Carrington?
I'm excellent. I'm with you, Earl. I'm with you.
Good. That helps, doesn't it?
You and me, Earl.
I feel the togetherness, man. And next on is David Grealish, who's in the greater Atlanta, Georgia area. He also reads the Stan Veit's History of the Personal Computer audiobook podcast and sometimes creates a classic computing video podcast. And David's got a book for sale, The Complete Historically Brewed, which from what I've been seeing on Twitter has been getting rave reviews. How are you doing there, David?
Thanks, Earl. Yeah, it is. I'm really happy about it. So I'm doing great. And just me and Carrington were talking there while we were waiting on you and some technical difficulties. So yeah, I have shipped 120 books out, so a lot of work, but all done now. So I'm doing good.
I haven't received mine yet, David.
Yeah, I know, but you said you only check your mail once every 10 days.
This is true, but still, whatever.
So that would help if you actually check the mail. See, they can bring the mail all the time, but if you don't check the mail...
Mail, I'd like to opt out of physical mail, like whatever. I have a question for you, David.
Uh-huh.
Is there a lesser Atlanta area?
Yeah,
like, are you, is that
that's the rest of it where I don't live.
I'm just wondering.
There probably are areas. There are in my town.
And literally, I am in the greater area because I'm like 30 miles north of midtown Atlanta or downtown Atlanta. So I'm barely still in the metropolitan area, but I am.
Okay,
so I have a question for you on the book, David. Are you actually doing all the fulfillment yourself?
Yes, I am doing everything myself.
Wow.
So I am the publisher as well as of course, I didn't write the entire book, but you know, I'm the editor and the author on a number of articles. But yeah, so I used a printer, a book printer, and that's all they did. And they did a great job, but all they did was print them and mail them to me. So I'm doing all the fulfillment.
That's amazing. And
yeah.
A lot of work. And wow. Well, so RCR listeners, we're actually going to be going through today's podcast in a fairly expeditious manner because one of our team here needs to run off in a little bit.
Name and shame, Earl.
I wasn't going to go there, but if I must, then...
That's all right.
David.
Yeah, David's got to run off, but so we're going to move rather quickly, and if, you know, you see that I've got my more military personality going here, it's because I want to get David to the church on time. So
I guess I have to get new glasses, so I have an eye appointment. I broke my glasses, so... And also, the car needs an oil change, I found out today.
So, see, none of this sounds good.
I'm booked.
David. You should have said anything. Our audience is going to turn on you now. Like
see,
that.
I left it kind of vague on purpose.
Hey,
so I'm going to jump right over to Carrington, and we've got a news item about Alan Turing.
Yeah, over in the UK, there is an e-petition thingy going on. For the last couple of years, there's been a service where if enough people sign an electronic petition, it can urge the House of Commons to have a debate on a subject. And it's a way to sort of make the people a little more involved with government, make the government maybe a little bit more accountable to people, that sort of thing. It's taken a bit of slack and because sometimes people think some of the things being debated are frivolous. But there is a petition going on right now that's making headlines, which is to pardon pioneering computer fellow. What do we call him? I don't know. super genius, Alan Turing. You guys know who Alan Turing is. Everybody would know who Alan Turing is, right? Mm-hmm. So, and his unfortunate and terrible and tragic end. So, and he was never pardoned. So there's a petition right now just urging the House of Commons to debate whether they should posthumously pardon him, which itself hasn't garnered too much controversy, other than the fact that it's so very long after the fact. It's really something I think, I guess, more of interest to our listeners in the UK. But because it was retro computing related, I thought I would bring it up in case they had noticed it. It's something they might want to consider signing.
It's a very sad story because
it is. Yeah, it's
the man was a war hero. And then he was, you know, hugely important to the, you know, the evolution, revolution of the computing and such. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he was, but he was convicted of being a homosexual. So in 1952, you know, that, and that basically drove him to suicide 2 years later.
Yep.
So it's a really sad story that, you know.
The whole idea of chemical castration, which, you know, as a kid, when I heard even the phrase, just I was like, ah, it sounds like acid or something. But yeah, just an awful and tragic end to an amazing and brilliant man. So yeah, so I to me, I thought it was a really nice thing that people are discussing this.
What was the chemical castration thing, though? I've never heard that before.
Chemical castration was something they would do to people, like you said, convicted of being a homosexual. And it would basically, you would take chemicals that yeah. would kill your
ability.
Sexual, basically, yeah, that kind of thing, like kill your sex drive.
They did that to him?
I think that that was one of the options. It's like, hey, do you want chemical castration or do you want to go to jail? This was crazily, half a century ago, this was normal practice.
Yeah.
And not just a British thing. It's crazy. Like, it's just weird. You think about the stuff that not long ago we would do as a species. He had a terrible ending to what was like just like a really crazily brilliant guy who contributed so much to computer science. Like, just regardless, forgetting, like, just completely putting aside the ending of his life, yeah. the wonderful contributions he made. And of course, probably most famously, the Turing test, the idea mm-hmm. that the one way to approach philosophically how you can tell whether something is being generated by a computer or by a person is whether or not they can pass what we now call the Turing test. And just stuff like that, like a really, really interesting fellow with a lot of great contributions to the science.
And I thought I'd read not too long ago, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, did either of you see this news story that I thought that the British government had formally apologized for
yeah,
their
but they
treatment?
Never, I believe so as well. But I think what this is to give him an actual pardon. What they said was, sorry, we convicted you, and we're not doing anything about it.
Gotcha.
Just a petition to say, well, that's not good enough. How about we admit, if we're admitting we're wrong, why don't we actually pardon him posthumously?
A posthumous overturning of that. Yeah. Interesting.
Now, whether that's even possible, who knows? An e-petition really is just people get together and say, hey, we would like you guys to debate this. Like, that's all this is for. Mm-hmm. And it's only open, obviously, to people that can vote. So if you are eligible to vote on Her Majesty's government, then this would be a petition that you would be eligible to sign, if you wanted to.
Oh, what it is, real quick, I'll post this in the show notes. Gordon Brown, the Prime Minister, apologized 2 years ago.
Is Golden
Brown. That's what I thought. I thought I had read something about that.
Yeah, so I'll post it in The Guardian, an article.
Thanks, David.
Okay.
Hey, David, while you're on, why don't we just head over to you for my document stopped scrolling here, for some news about the Computer History Museum.
Yeah, and there's a couple things here, so really I'm just going to touch on them. So one of the first news is that the Computer History Museum launched an online Steve Jobs exhibit. And to be honest, I haven't had much time to really look at it because I've been real busy. So I intend to, but just in looking through it, it's got, you know, lots of pictures, lots of different short articles and oral histories. And so, you know, check that out just to briefly go over it. Next in line in the show notes is so one thing that particularly stands out is a rare video of Steve Jobs talking about the history of Apple in 1980. So he was like, what, 30 then? I think 30, 31 or whatever. And there's not a lot of video of him at that age. So this is pre, you know, Lisa, Macintosh, Apple III, and, you know, kind of his famous days that a lot of people recognize him from. So that's really interesting. So there's a link there. And just lastly, kind of in line with the, not with Steve Jobs, but in line with Computer History Museum news, is they have received a grant from Google for setting up a digital repository for organizing and categorizing, you know, digital artifacts. So archiving them and then cataloging, you know, organizing, so cataloging.
How does that intersect with archive.org and the Internet Archive and their activities?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess for the Computer History Museum announced it in the sense of, the, you know, Google's given them this big grant. So I don't know. It's separate, I guess. So I guess since the Computer History Museum collects artifacts, you know, hardware, software, and I guess ephemera and stuff, I guess, you know, now digital kind of goes along with that.
Yeah, I hope that's a bad thing. I mean, the more the merrier, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody should be trying to archive, catalog, you know, whatever they can of all of this stuff, because there's so much of it, I fear, that's just getting lost.
I agree, and as computer guys, I think we all agree that you should have multiple backups. So this just sort of makes sense.
Yeah, I don't see a mention, at least in this one article that I linked to from MarketWatch, about archive.org, but hopefully they'll work with them so there's not redundancy, though I guess that also wouldn't be bad, but their efforts would be better for, you know, newer archiving. Anyway, I didn't research it any in-depth other than just this one article.
I did look through that Computer History Museum site, the online Steve Jobs exhibit,
yeah,
and it's really good. Like, it's really well put together, and yes, it's not maybe like crazily deep. It's more about a quick, broad overview of his career. It's sort of what...
Oh, no.
Carrington?
It's just like walking through a museum in there, so it's really well named. But that said, it was really interesting. Like, I learned some stuff. I liked the pictures, all of that.
You dropped out there for a moment, but yeah, we'll just keep going. Yeah, so we lost you for like 5 seconds. But...
Oh, Skype. That was the best 5 seconds. That was my best ever. Oh, you missed my best line. It was fantastic. I can't repeat it.
So, Carrington, would you stand a little bit closer to the internet? Okay, try not to get too far away from it.
I'm now hugging the internet. I'm hugging you all.
You have your arms around its warm, fuzzy tendrils.
And the internet has tentacles. Surprises nobody. Anyway, Computer History Museum site, it's good. If you would like to walk through a virtual Steve Jobs exhibit, it is really well put together. It's a good site.
Cool.
Well... So I have no smooth segue here, so I'm going to go with a jagged segue and hand the mic over to myself for an article in Technologizer about the 40th anniversary of video games. And it's an interesting article, you know, going all the way back to computer space. And the article makes the point that, you know, the kids of today who are thinking, oh, the legacy of video games, you know, maybe for them it's Xbox, or if they're a little older even, maybe NES or something like that. But video games go way, way back. And one of the interesting things about that, you know, I put a lot of quarters into a Pong-like game when I was a kid, going to the pizza parlor. Mm-hmm. Are you guys still there?
I'm still here.
Okay. Yep. It got really quiet. So
the internet is giving me a warm hug, so I'm just being silent.
I died again. and, you know, it's amazing how many quarters that thing got out of me for being such a simple game, just some black and white pixels just moving around. And this article on Technologizer kind of, you know, says, hey, people were standing in line, basically, to play games that are probably two orders of magnitude less sophisticated than the games that you could get today, maybe even on a handheld. But
right.
Still, it's fun to go back and look at this stuff, and they've got a couple of nice pictures on the article, and I think people should take a look, especially if you've been into gaming for a while. You know, I've seen other articles like this too, kind of compendiums of video game history, but it's always fun to think about just how simple stuff was, but how fun it was. It was still tons of fun back then.
It's a really excellent article, and just to mention, it's written by Benj Edwards, who's a computer historian, you know, very, very much dedicated in writing a lot. We've had articles and segments with him before.
He always does a great job.
So, yeah. So, you know, he's done the different pictorials, too, with the Technologizer. So, but it's a particularly good article. And if you scroll down, do you guys see, there's like a picture of a building entering Nutting Associates. Do you see like a coincidence 6 miles away, those two blue machines, the dual joysticks? Those are cool looking.
Let me scroll down to that. But we can move ahead while I'm scrolling.
Yeah.
You're the host.
Fine, man.
Well, everybody just
everybody scroll.
Well, I'll scroll in a minute. Well, while I'm scrolling, Carrington, why don't you tell us about an incredible auction that just happened regarding an Apple founding contract?
That's a great question. Why don't I tell us? Why am I so resistant?
Why haven't you?
What is my
problem? Yeah, why haven't you told us already?
Oh, my goodness.
You're waiting.
Anyway, there was the founding contract that set up Apple Computers back on April 1st, 1976. It is, yeah, April 1st, 1976. It was signed by Steve Wozniak.
It was a joke.
Steve Jobs and famously bad investor Ronald Bain. It divided up the new company into 100 shares, 45 to Jobs, 45 to Woz, and 10 to oh-so-sad bad choice-making Ronald Bain. Ronald, I think it was 11 days later, he sold back his 10% share for a right. total of $2,600, which would currently be worth around $36 billion. So, you know, sometimes you make the right call, sometimes you make the wrong call. Anyway, three-page document. Just sold.
But he got a nice car, I'll bet.
I'm sure, yes, he did. So it was just a three-page document, and it was expected to fetch a little over $100,000. It actually went for $1.35 million. So it shows just now in the post-alive phase of Steve Jobs' career that, like right now, Apple things are just so crazily hot, both on eBay and it would seem in other auctions as well. So three pages. Now, I get that this is a very unique item and by definition completely one of a kind, but that is an outrageously high sales price.
$1 million.
Yes. Yep.
I'm completely shocked by it. I honestly can't imagine.
I've never heard of him before. He's the CEO of Cisneros, Eduardo Cisneros.
What is that?
Have you guys heard of that company?
No,
I have not.
He's got some spending cash, though. So now it was a telephone bid, and it only took a few minutes to go from the initial – I guess it was $70,000 was the initial bid, and it was just 5 or 6 minutes later or something, the bidding ended at this. And I wonder if people were just throwing a bit – maybe Eduardo didn't think the bidding was going to stop with him. Who knows? Anyway, he's got three pieces of paper, and he paid about $400,000 or $500,000
a piece. Wait, what was his first name again?
Eduardo. It's a good name. Eduardo Cisneros.
It is a good name. So tell me, Carrington, did the article say who – and I mean maybe you mentioned this already and it just bounced down my brain, but who actually owned it to begin with? Who got the dough?
Another part of the story, right? Because the original owner bought it from Ron Wayne for like $500 or something, right?
Yeah, Carrington? Ron. Poor Ron. Yep. So he I guess his copies, some collector bought it a while ago for about $500.
Oh, that is some irony. That is really, really, isn't it? He lost out on the initial investment.
It's so harsh.
I know. It's so sad. Yeah. So
just quickly, Cisneros, so if you go to their website, a global enterprise, the Cisneros Group of Companies is one of the largest privately held media, entertainment, telecommunications, and consumer products organizations in the world. So the guy's got plenty of cash.
Right.
So he can throw that out and hang it up on his wall. And I guess it'll be a great conversation piece.
Yes.
I hope so.
I don't know if this is the kind of thing that would hold its value. Like, I don't know what this sort of thing does investment-wise. So, we'll see. Anyway, big sale. It surprised everybody. Yeah. Maybe including Eduardo.
And me.
Definitely surprised poor Wayne. Poor Mr. Wayne.
Yeah, just along those lines. And, I haven't checked where that Apple One – we don't have this in our notes. I know there's an Apple One on eBay for like $175,000. And I'll look. I doubt that it's sold. But you got to wonder, people paying that kind of money, if that one sells for like the $250,000 one, 20 years from now, will it really be worth that much or more?
Like it you will say? Be if it was originally Ronald Wayne's computer that he threw out.
Yes, that's the curse.
But as a group, us computer enthusiasts are really bidding up his stuff because we're picking on him. This is all just an elaborate thing to make him feel bad. We're really mean people.
It's a conspiracy. But, Yeah, I'm still sad I don't have my Commodore 65. So, hey Carrington.
Earl.
While you're up.
Hey.
It's the Carrington Show.
Yeah, I
wow, that was really good. Was that Hugh Taylor?
Yeah.
Carrington, tell us about the Apple II online game server.
This thing
because you wouldn't tell us about the other things, so tell us about this.
This one I will tell you about. This is unbelievably cool. Oh, but I can't remember what the guy's name is that started it. I feel awful. I should have looked this up. I will babble about it while one of you look up the person name behind it. So the Apple Game Server, which we'll have a link on the site. It's over at the ASCIIExpress.net website. The whole concept behind this is mind-blowing and just completely amazing. Lots of games, as you guys would know, originally – lots of games and lots of the early software came on cassette. So essentially it's a collection of sounds. The sounds have been digitized and placed on a site that can simply play them back. So what you do is you take, say, your iPad. You go to this website. You connect a headphone adapter from your iPad's headphone jack or a computer headphone jack or wherever to the cassette port on your Apple II. You boot your Apple II, type load, then just click the link on the website. It pipes the sound just as if you had connected the cassette, and bingo, you've booted your Apple II and are now playing that game. So it's a complete repository of software, all just distributable by just piping the sound to it. It's nothing that would be necessarily exclusive to Apple II, so there's no reason, I guess, this couldn't exist for a lot of other computers. And maybe it already does. I really only swim in the Apple II ocean, so it was totally news to me. I love this whole concept. It's absolutely fantastic. I'm completely thrilled by this.
Yeah. That's incredible.
And probably not as finicky as it was to actually work with a cassette deck on an Apple II, like it
Nothing
was back in the day.
Nothing could be as finicky as that.
Yeah, you'd be able to like tweak the sound and get it perfect and load everything
the
first time.
You're supposed to put your volume all the way up on the iPad, say. So it's Egan Ford. So he goes by the handle Data Jerk of something called the Jerkworks. So he's the one who has launched it. So I guess it's his. It's been tested on the iPhone 4. I'm reading this now from a2central.com, great source for news. iPhone 4, iPad 2, Firefox, Chrome, Safari, basically Mac stuff. There's currently over 100 titles on there. And I just find the whole concept thrilling. I like the look of the site.
Yeah,
very neat
looks
and
nice.
Retro. With like the fake scan lines. It's absolutely fantastic. Great execution, an amazing concept. Love this. This is something that should absolutely be you're at Kansas Fest and somebody says, look what I've done. Completely mind-blowing. Love this thing.
Look what I can do.
And just like a huge list of games and stuff. And just like, you go and get yourself a very cheap Apple II from eBay, or you find one used or whatever, and then here you have an immediate source without needing floppy disks, without needing anything else. You just, you have something like a computer or other computer that can play music. One cable between the two, and bingo, you're in business. Like, just amazing.
Are you affiliated with this site?
No, I'm not. I'm just thrilled by it. Like, when somebody does something like this and executes it well, I find it just completely amazing. I really think this is a laudable thing.
Yeah, it is. Cheap, easy,
I want to try it out.
Yeah. It when you see something like this, it kind of makes you wonder why somebody didn't do it before.
Absolutely. Yep. Does anything like this exist for another platform? Like, this was news to me, but like, Earl, is there like a Commodore version of this?
You wouldn't be able to do this with a Commodore, at least not with the stock equipment, because the Commodore data cassette had a data connector that plugged right into the Commodore. So it wasn't an audio interconnection. It was,
So retro product.
Other computers would, though.
Yeah, retro product.
I mean, you could do this with like TRS-80 mm-hmm. computers, probably with the whole line. I think they were all just a standard audio connection.
Yeah, like I had a Coco, and it definitely was a standard audio thing because I used to use just an off-the-shelf Radio Shack cassette player.
Well, someone should be able to make a Commodore adapter cable, because even though it looks like a data connection going to the Commodore, there's nothing but audio coming out of the cassette, right?
Well,
so
right,
it's just an adapter.
But that's why I was saying with the stock equipment.
Yeah,
you can,
exactly.
You can do it like that. And the same holds true of the Atari 8-bits, that their cassette deck, the 410 cassette deck, was actually a straight data connector into the Atari. So you'd have to have some sort of interface.
Those existed already.
You had to use their cassette.
Either that or, like Carrington's saying, possibly an aftermarket thing that let you connect it into a generic cassette deck.
Or you could just put headphones on and then have a microphone to the computer and just mimic the sounds. I'm just trying to be stupid.
Yeah, just sort of sing along.
No, yeah, I mean, if you like were clever enough, if you had perfect pitch, you could probably do it with your voice, actually.
Well, I would assume so.
You could imitate it, you know what I mean?
Directly. Yeah, whistle twice, right? It's going to hurt.
So, wow, it's the Carrington Show. Carrington, you get to go again. So,
yeah, yay, I'm with the internet.
We're jumping into a new category of thing here, though, so I will at least, you know, kind of set the stage. We're talking about retro computing holiday gift ideas.
Which David sprung on us like this morning. Yeah, hey, guys, let's do this immediately.
For geeks, it's just such a great idea. And, you know, I love to get retro computing gifts. So this category, I thought we should do like all year.
Well, I thought so, too. Like, I do think this is a good idea. For holiday gifts, it's a little last minute.
Yeah. I'm going to get the show out today, I promise. So that, mm-hmm. at least that gives people, what, right. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, yeah, Thursday, Friday. So there's six more shopping days.
So people
seven
know
coming Sunday.
What to send us, right? So, but, you know, first up is Carrington telling us about his ideal holiday gifts.
Okay, so I came up with three top of my head. The first was to send somebody to an event. Like, I picked Kansas Fest. It's the kind of thing that you could you
it's
can't
like
sign
big
up yet.
Gift, right?
Well, it is. Yeah, absolutely. But if you had like a hubby or a girlfriend or whatever that was really into retro things, here's something you could give them, and you could do really last minute because you can't even buy it at the moment. So you could just give them one of those make it yourself gift card thingies that says, "I'm going to send you, provided I don't dump you in the meantime, at some time next year, I will send you to Kansas Fest or a different sort of event." You could look up a retro event that sort of is in keeping with their hobby and then either send them there or agree to go with them or something like that. So that's my first idea, is something trip based. My second idea, it was more physical, was to get the movie Colossus: The Forbin Project. Now, oh. I know you know this one, Earl, because you did it on RetroVids.
Love the movie.
Yeah, me too. If you're interested in old computers and Big Iron and that kind of stuff, great fun movie. But here's the thing. If somebody is an enthusiast of retro computers and you want to get them something unique about this, the only edition that's worth watching, really, is the Laserdisc version.
Hmm.
Because it's the only one that's the full widescreen. The North American region is a very bad pan and scan DVD. The PAL one bills itself as widescreen, but it's one of those old versions where they took the widescreen and matted it down to 4x3. So you got really low resolution, even though you're seeing the whole image. But the Laserdisc is the full, you know, 2.35:1 ratio, original ratio image. And the nice thing about Laserdiscs is there's no macro vision on them. So it's very easy to take a Laserdisc and say, rip it to digital or rip it to a DVD or something like that. You don't have to get a macro vision stripper or anything like that. You cable it together and bingo. So you could either rent or acquire a cheap Laserdisc player, and any way that you can record DVD, like if you've got a way to rip things into your computer to capture video or have a DVD recorder or something like that, it's really easy with a single cable between them. Now you've ripped it and you have essentially a perfect copy, and it would be completely legal because you own the Laserdisc. So this is what I would suggest. It's something that even if somebody has the movie and you're not sure, oh, do they have it, they almost certainly don't have the Laserdisc version, which is the good one. So you could safely surprise somebody with a retro movie. And my third idea was to get a little creative and to give somebody a retro magazine subscription. So you'd go on eBay and buy a year's worth of something. Last episode I was talking about Popular Science or Popular Mechanics or something popular. But you could get old Nibble magazines or old Byte magazines or Computer Shopper from 1 year, get a year's worth, easily obtainable online, and then give somebody a subscription. So you'd give them the first one for the holidays, say, and then next 11 months, once a month, you mail them the next issue. So they're getting it as if they've got a magazine subscription in 1979 or 1943 or whatever. I thought it'd be a fun sort of retro thing they could look forward to the whole
year. That'd be cool.
That is very creative. That's very creative.
Anyway, you those are my
threads. Going back to the Forbin Project for a second, I'm curious why when I click the link on Amazon, the picture there is of a stapler. I just don't get that. It's not
I
Office Space, guys.
I don't get it either. There's somebody selling the Laserdisc or something, or some DVD version, I guess, and it's
oh, and it says Silent Running
with another movie, Silent Running, and I don't know. I don't understand it. But what you want is the Laserdisc version, which is easily gotten through eBay and something like that. So
I was going to ask you about that because on Amazon it was showing not in stock, but you can find it then.
Sure. Yeah. It's readily available. It was a wide release on Laserdisc. Laserdisc really haven't held their value hugely collectible. So for most things like this, you'd be able to pick it up without investing. It would cost you a lot more to, say, track down a cheap Laserdisc player than to find the movie itself.
Hey, let me ask you something too. Carrington, look on in our show notes. You know, we have notes, or I am.
I'm looking at them.
That YouTube link for the Forbin Project, which as a gift, obviously people, it'd be nice to get one you could watch, but you could watch the Forbin Project on YouTube. Is that the widescreen version? Does it look like?
I don't know. I don't even see your link.
It's in our notes.
Links are dead to me.
Our little texting in our show notes.
Oh, that's too much effort. I'd have to turn around and face the other way.
Oh, okay. Well, no problem. Well, maybe we get a chance to check it out. David. It looks like it may actually be the widescreen version on YouTube.
Yeah, but then it's not going to be
a gift, I know.
Resolution. It's going to be YouTube. Yeah,
no,
that's not much of a gift. Here, sit down. I'll click a link for you.
Right. Here's your gift, this link, and my phone's ringing.
That's me calling you to say I don't like your gift idea.
Hey, David, did you need to get that? Or
No.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'm going to turn it over to you. What are your gift ideas?
Okay, so first category I came up with was T-shirts. So I put a couple there. So just real quickly, there's a link to, let's see, an Apple II T-shirt from Studio Tees. That's pretty cool for $18. Now, if you do some looking around, there's plenty of places you can find this. So I won't spend too much time on it. Look there. The next one is a Commodore shirt from Cafe Press. So this is from our friend Larry Anderson, actually, who was a contributor to Historically Brewed back in the day, and he bought one of the books. So that's kind of cool. That was, you know, not on purpose or accidental or whatever, but an Adore My 64 shirt. But if you look around Cafe Press, and then I just put a generic kind of link to Zazzle.com, you could find lots of other examples, too.
Yeah, lots of stuff on Zazzle if you like this sort of thing.
Yeah, so those are a couple examples, and then Zazzle, look around Cafe Press. Also, Think Geek used to have some, and I was looking there and couldn't really find them. They used to have like another I Adore My 64, kind of a brown one that had a picture
Think
of the computer.
Geek is a good source for geek-related T-shirts and stuff, though.
And then next, I chose a book, which is a really nice coffee table pictorial book that I have, so I really like it. It's called Core Memory, A Visual Survey of Vintage Computers. And obviously, you could find plenty of other books and a couple other, you know, sort of coffee table ones. I'm trying to think of another example. The Computer is one. Has a picture of the Sony, like, computer dog on the cover. So that's another idea. So books are always good ideas. And then a movie. So I chose War Games, and in this case, the 25th anniversary edition. So a very good, you know, vintage movie because it's got the MSI 8080 in it. And a good movie overall anyway. And then last minute, I chose, because how could I not? My book, The Complete Historically Brewed.
Makes a great Christmas gift.
Yeah.
Supposedly ships to Canada.
Yeah. I've got 50 copies left in the original run, and of course you'd want to have pay a little extra, have me ship it priority mail. So there you go. It's my choices. So Earl, you take it.
Okay. Well, my choices were, for a movie, I'd have to say Pirates of Silicon Valley.
Excellent.
You know, it's interesting. That movie I could watch probably 100 times because there's so much music in the movie, like period music, you know, while things are going on, that it's almost like a kind of a combination movie, music video, sort of, you know, computer retrospective. And in terms of the accuracy of the events that it's portraying,
yeah, we could do a show on that.
They're heavily dramatized, you know, some of them are just a little bit off, but you know, by and large, it gets stuff right, and it's such a fun movie, you know, and that the actors really make it. I love Noah Wiley and Anthony Michael Hall.
Both good.
In this movie, yeah. So that'd be my pick for a movie. On a book, I picked something interesting: Dealers of Lightning, Xerox PARC, and the Dawn of the Computer Age, and this is one of the first times that I would pick or endorse something that I haven't actually read myself.
It's good. I have it on audiobook, and it's excellent.
Yeah, I've heard so many good reviews of this book, though, that I can, with a clean conscience here, I can say, get the book, you know, whether you get it from the library or somebody gives it to you as a gift or whatever, that definitely worth a read. And for, you know, something else, I'd say, although I've had a little trouble on eBay lately trying to, you know, dig through all the noise level to find something good. You can still find good stuff on eBay. So if, you know, you're looking for a gift for that retro geek friend or family, then an eBay gift card.
I never knew you could buy those.
You can indeed.
That's weird. Because
I didn't
then,
know
so,
that either.
So eBay then pays the seller, I guess.
I believe that is the way that it works. Yes.
Yeah, basically it's anything that uses PayPal. So it's sort of because eBay owns PayPal. So I think it's really just giving you a PayPal sum.
Yeah.
Cool. I didn't know that existed.
And if you don't mind me adding, Earl, like I said, I own Dealers of Lightning on an audio cassette, but I noticed you know, it's available through, you can get an audio version through Audible. So that's, I love audiobooks. So if that's.
No, if there's an Audible link, definitely.
Yeah, it's good.
That'd be great.
I thought you were going to add your book again.
If I might just add it again.
Recommend my book.
No, but check this out.
It wouldn't really work to have an audio version of your book, would it, David, with all the pictures?
Well, you
just
read it and describe the pictures. So up on the top left, he looks angry.
But Pirates of Silicon Valley is $4.99 at Amazon. So that's
an amazing price.
Yeah.
For a good movie. People haven't seen it, and if you're listening to this podcast, you would dig that film.
Yep.
Dig it, man.
Dig it.
Absolutely.
Speaking. It's one of the most natural things we do. It's also the basis of a remarkable research project at IBM. This is an experimental computer system that recognizes what I say. I talk, and my words appear on the computer screen. It has a business vocabulary of thousands of words, and it even knows the difference between words that sound alike but have different meanings. Watch this. Please write to Mrs. Wright right now. This computer system is another example of innovation at IBM. In fact, it's the most advanced voice recognition system of its kind, period.
I'm here with an average American homemaker with her own Apple personal computer. Jill, do you use your Apple for household budgeting?
Actually, I'm working in gold futures.
Well, you could probably put a lot of recipes in there, huh?
Mm-hmm. And you can do trend analyses, generate bar graphs.
Are you really a homemaker?
Of course.
So Apple is the appliance of the 80s for all those pesky household chores.
I also own a small steel mill.
So speaking of eBay, previous eBay auctions, let's find out how we did last time. David, how'd your Kromenko do?
Oh, let's see. I hadn't gone there. Oh, it sold for $152. Did we, did I not change these? I thought maybe we covered these. Did I not change them in the show notes maybe? You know what I'm saying? Are these actually the ones previous to now?
No, I thought we did. I thought these are the ones we did last time.
I think so. Yeah, I did the Mac Classic Accelerator last time, didn't I? They all run together.
And I did the LED.
Okay, I'm sorry. I don't know. Just
too late
confused.
Now, David. You're going to have to stick with your choice.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what it is? I'm confused because I thought it was so worth mentioning. It had already ended. That's why I'm having sort of deja vu or whatever. So, so it sold after two bids for $152.50, which I think was an absolute bargain. Yeah, and the thing worked. You know, and you can see they showed some video from the camera. So, man, someone got a great deal on that. Depending on how much they paid for shipping.
Yes. And my rare Commodore electronic calculator did not sell at $99. And I think I kind of predicted that.
A little pricey.
That, you know, that was just a little bit too high for this. I think a lot of people would still like to have one of the Commodore calculators with the chicken head icon, but I don't think it's going to sell at this amount of money. And it's relisted, and I still don't think it's going to sell at that amount of money. But
they relisted it three times, and it's sort of the same price, and it still hasn't sold.
Well, you know, I say maybe third time's the charm, but I don't think they're going to get that price.
Oh, they lowered the buy it now price to $119.99. So still, yeah.
And what happened on your Transwarp Accelerator?
Nothing. It's still there. It's because it's a buy it now sort of thing. It's had no offers. It has had no motion. Nobody has looked at it. Nobody cares. Everyone agrees with me that the Mac Classic isn't a very good computer. But if you do have one and for some reason you like it, I still think that this is a good way to turn it into something a little faster.
Well, what about your picks this time? Maybe they'll fare better.
They will.
What have you got for going first? This time?
I got two things. There's a lot of stuff on eBay right now. I guess because the with the holidays coming up, maybe people are putting a lot more stuff out there. But I found two interesting ones. One is a 1979 Interact home computer. Do you guys know this thing?
I think maybe we had on a real early RCR, maybe there was a different model.
I don't
model.
Listen to the show.
But I've heard of it, but yeah, I'm not familiar with it,
this
really.
So I ended up reading about it. I found it a really interesting thing. You can use Atari joysticks, but they're wired. The Y-axis is wired differently, so you either have to rewire them, or a lot of people would just use Atari joysticks upside down, and then it would work or something. Has a built-in cassette port. It's from 1979. Hooks up to a computer. This one's looks like a complete system with the box and the manuals. It's going for a whopping $8,000, though.
That's crazy.
$7,999.99. It seems an outrageous price, but if you are a 1970s home computer completist, then this seems like a neat. I mean, shipping's reasonable at about $67 once you drop the $8,000 to purchase it. Anyway, it caught my eye because I really wasn't aware of this computer, and I had a good time reading about it. But the big thing I'm picking is on eBay right now is Podbricks. You guys probably remember Podbricks. They came out with a bunch of Apple and iPod related Lego minifigures and were, I think, repeatedly sued for them. They came out with a 300-unit limited edition version, Steve Jobs and Steve Woz,
a
little playset. This is number one. This is the one that's number one of the 300, still sealed in the original box. So it was never, ever opened. If you are a collector of this sort of thing, this would be about as collectible as it's going to come. But they are asking collectible prices, $1,500. It already has had, I think, a number of offers on it, but they have all been turned down, I assume. It says it's had six offers so far, but it has yet to sell. So it looks like they're holding out for something at or close to their $1,500. Little tiny Lego thing.
I don't see that where it has any offers. Or maybe they
on
turned
the
off
history,
offers.
On the right, you can see other item info. If you click on and show history, six offers at the moment.
Oh, okay.
It's located in Irvine, California.
Oh, but you know what? It looks like they turned off the offers because mine only shows where you can buy it now. That's
Yeah, no, you can't make offers anymore. I guess it previously was having offers. And
yeah.
You're right. They must have gotten tired of that. Said, no, give me my money. So they're looking for $1,500. But if you're into Lego and don't have the money to buy a $1.35 million set of three pieces of paper, then this would be maybe a good second choice.
It just seems like you could make this. I mean, if you're really for $1,500,
well, you need the heads. You need that. You can't. The problem is, like, it's got that little Mac Lego thing, which I think only comes here in that little calendar. And you need the heads to make Steve Jobs and Woz. Although I do think Woz and Steve were sold as individual pieces, so you could probably assemble this. But I think the point of this one would be the collectability of it, that it's number one out of the 300 and it's still sealed in the box.
Huh.
Neither of these are things that I would bid on, by the way. My choices don't appeal to me personally, but people are out there buying crazy Apple stuff right now. So there you go.
Yeah. Not for that kind of money.
What do you guys got to compete with that?
Well, David, it looks like you've got a whole category of things
that's
to possibly compete.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, along the lines with crazy prices on, you know, Apple IIs recently and, you know, Apple I and these things. So the next computer, you know, also related, I guess, to Steve Jobs' death. So I started looking for next. Thought I'd find one of those. So instead, I decided just to link to the search for next in computing, you know, specifically vintage computing, just to kind of give an overview of what's out there. So basically, you know, like first here, vintage next computer system, mint in boxes, works great. It's a slab, it's not a cube. So they want $1,090. So that's easily 8 to 10 times, you know, what those were going for recently. Here's a turbo color, which is, in my opinion, probably more valuable, more rare. You know, $1,000, buy it now. Some mugs and T-shirts and other stuff, a couple printers. Here's another turbo color. $1,700, buy it now. I mean,
ooh.
And then you know, if you go over to the left-hand side, you can click off completed auctions. Here we go. Show only. Sorry. Try to get there.
Some of these prices are outrageous.
Yeah.
So do you guys think that, like, when the vintage computer bubble bursts, that it's going to kill the economy again? You know, kind of like the mortgage bubble or the, you know, the dot-com bubble? I mean,
I'll have my Lego.
Well, like in the completed, so here's the next cube that sold for $1,000, you know, as a system that works. So I kind of think here's another one that sold an early next cube system. It says for $1,800, 35 bids. I've got to believe that that is not going to maintain its value in a, you know, a year or two. It's going to drop. But ultimately, see, and here's the thing, they're not going to work forever. So to say, oh, but one day they'll be worth that much or more, but one day they're not going to work anymore.
It's interesting that as I've been watching this crazy inflation of prices on eBay, you know, I've thought there's really two values. You know, there's two different values of something that you buy. One value is the value to you. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I want this, and, you know, irrespective of what I could resell it for, I want it. I want it in my collection. I want to play with it. I want to do things with it. So there's that. Then, you know, there's the other potential that you think, I'm going to buy it, and then it's going to be worth more because look at how these things are climbing, kind of the speculative value. And in vintage computing, there's a very small subset of things that I would buy not that I could, but if I had the money, that I would buy from a speculative point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Most of it, I think, if you bought it with that in mind, it's a real risk. I mean,
I don't know. I've heard somewhere that Ronald Wayne really thinks that you should buy a lot of that stuff.
Yes.
he's investing heavily in next cubes right now.
I think I've heard that myself, Carrington. But you know what I mean? I mean, these prices are crazy.
Yeah, I've never bought things.
I totally
for
see
that,
the appeal, though, of having a Next system because you want to play with it. Like the Next system that's a great computer, really, really fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I get that. If for a reasonable price, pick up a Turbo Color or something like that, that's an amazingly fun retro system to have. But it's just not one to have if you're going to spend thousands of dollars on it.
Yeah. Yeah, free is the price that I usually like. But, you know, you can't always get them for free. But, yeah, you know, somewhere in between the cost of a Big Mac and mortgaging my house is where I kind of taper off.
Isn't that a big range? But okay. I hope that's a big range. Otherwise, you got a great mortgage.
I do think the next...
a very small house. That's a possibility.
I do think the next systems, though, they probably represent the last of, you know, a modern computer that was different, you know, both in design and, of course, its operating system. Even though... Yeah, they ultimately didn't sell that many. I think they only sold 50,000 next machines, period. But, you know, it was a significant computer in the sense of it became Mac OS X. But then its design was very, you know, interesting. So from that standpoint, you know, late 80s, 1990s, other than Macs being interesting in their design, there haven't been other different computers, personal computers, in that sense.
Yeah, and I agree. The next is just cool all the way around. So it'd be interesting. Maybe we ought to track one or two of these auctions that are, you know, going for the more inflated prices and see what happens, see if they sell. Maybe you ought to just bookmark a couple of them, David. Maybe we could talk about it next time.
Okay.
See what Ronald Wayne is.
I've had a couple of them, though, and unfortunately I have had to sell them, so I didn't get them for, like I said, to make money. I don't even know if I made money on them. I guess I might have a little bit.
Just ran out of space?
Well, no, just hard financial times. The last next cube I had, I ended up selling it because we were just hard off money-wise. And I had
and they use up space. It's one of those things where if you've got a collection sitting there thinking, you know, I could exchange this for money, and it's using a ton of room.
Yeah.
That's the downside to collecting retro computers versus, say, just focusing on one retro computer system and having a bunch of software. Software usually doesn't take up a lot of space. But if you're collecting computers, it doesn't take a big collection to suddenly use a lot of footprint in your house.
Yeah, stamps and baseball cards look pretty appealing when I look in the garage.
Right.
The last thing on the next, so recently, in fact, I was looking. One thing I'd like to do is run, a virtual next step operating system and run it virtually. So that, you know, you can have the feel of using the operating system. Of course, you're not on the hardware. But, you know, we've talked about the emulators and stuff before. That's kind of the other trade-off, I guess. You get the experience of using it.
You go into a business where you sell glasses with images of the computer on them. You just put on your next glasses, and then you just use your emulator. You just look down. Look, I see the keyboard.
So on my auction this time, I picked a core storage memory plane.
That's beautiful.
It sounds like from the auction that it came out of a System 360. And I tell you, I had one of these as a young man. As a young teenager, I had an actual square of core storage like this. And one of the arms on here broke off. And, you know, the little core bits started unraveling. I mean, it's interesting. It's almost like a tapestry, you know, that the thing starts to unweave. And so I was kind of like, oh, that sucks. And I just threw it away. I can't believe it. I mean, I just wish I had taken better care of that. But you don't know, you know, back then.
This is a great choice for a retro geek gift. You could, because it's not huge. Somebody can hang it on their wall. It's really nice looking. I think this is also a great choice. Like, of all the auction things we looked at so far, this is the only reasonable one to look at actually purchasing.
And, you know, there's something I've said, yeah, I use this word, you know, from time to time on the computing stuff, but there's something just physical, visceral about being able to see memory. I mean, actually look at the thing and go, wow, that's a bit. Look at that. That's amazing. I mean, I'd love to be able to show my kids this, you know. It's when I pulled out one of the disk cartridges for the PDP-11, I show them, hey, look, this is an actual disk. Look at this. You can see the platter, you know, kind of thing. I mean, with this, you can actually see the ones and zeros. It's just –
It's also really nice – like aesthetically, it's really nice looking core memory. Like there's another – there's a UNIVAC core memory on right now on eBay. Going for a buy it now price of $100, but it's not nearly as aesthetically pleasing as this. Like this old IBM Magnetic Core one is a really aesthetically nice looking bit of memory.
It really is a nice kind of symmetrical sort of pleasing pattern, isn't it? So yeah,
and clean looking and stuff. Like it's something you could see being displayed as almost.
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I believe these were handmade. I think, weren't they? I thought I read that somewhere. They had to be handmade.
I don't know that answer, but looking at it, if you look at the close-up picture that they have here, the upper left quadrant, you can see that the tapestry does look like it could have been handmade. It doesn't look machined.
The donuts.
Yeah, exactly. The donuts, you know, one of the strings looks like it actually has a little curvature, like it was a human putting that
together. The thing is, like, if you look down and it says see more items like this one. There's old IBM 360 memory data plane. It's got a vintage 1964 IBM 360 B-cross memory. It says it's not magnetic core. It's got an IBM 1972 monolithic memory. All very different looking. I can see, like, this would be an interesting thing to collect, old physical forms of computer memory from the 60s and 70s. Wouldn't take up a lot of space. Doesn't look like it takes a lot of money either to get even very unique looking original editions. I could see something on a wall collecting these things, and it would be a neat sort of thing to be collecting. Not that I'm going to do it, but still, aesthetically, I like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it kind of lends itself to display, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And I have one. Mine's from some UNIVAC system, and it's smaller. And I don't know where it is offhand. I think mine's like a 3-inch square, and that one's like 6.5.
Or you could collect actual memory. Like you could have in jars like the brains of famous computer people. And
yeah. I collect
IBM
memories.
Scientists. I collect memory. Yeah.
And like the time I went to the beach.
The next quadrant of my collection. What, do I smell formaldehyde? Oh, no. Don't worry about the smell at all.
Please just lean over this tub.
Yeah. Oh God. Oh, I don't want to visualize that.
Yeah, man, I'm running for the mind bleach right now as we speak.
That's what I bring to the show, people.
Must not remember. So that's our auctions for this time. And you know, with that, I think that we have actually in record time gotten to the end of the show. So we actually have a couple minutes to
I don't want to go that fast.
The virtual, you know, whip out there and was, you know, getting us moving. But it actually leaves us a couple minutes here to just relax and chat. So let's go around the table. Carrington, what's up with you lately?
Lots. I had a friend over. I've been doing a lot of computer, a lot of swapping on my own home computer system. My main system at the moment is a 15-inch MacBook Pro, and I've swapped out the both the internal hard drive and the internal DVD player for two different solid-state drives. So
I've been hearing about a lot more people doing that.
Screamingly fast, like just outrageous. I cannot believe the speed difference. Just amazing. Absolutely fantastic. Pricey, like crazy pricey to get large capacity solid-state drives at the moment. I ended up selecting the ones from OWC, Otherworld Computing. I like their products, and I've been very happy with the drives. So I've got two of those in there, and it just fantastically fun. So I've really been enjoying that. And a good friend of mine came over, and she and I have been playing some vintage games as I and recording this session. So I'm continuing that, bringing people over and playing their favorite games from their childhood and recording the sessions. And I'll eventually be using them in WinMaker. So that's been fun. And trying to set up my system, I've been doing box opening videos that will eventually go on to YouTube. And I've been trying to get a better system for recording those because they're not coming out great. So if anybody's got ideas on how to set up a rig to properly record, first opening videos for YouTube and stuff, I'd love to hear from you because mine are not coming out really great so far.
Because the video's not good?
Well, because the video, my hands get in the way and that kind of stuff. So I'm trying it right now with a suspended camera above, and it's just hard to keep things in focus. And it's a bit of a pain. And I don't want to have to go to like a 3-camera shoot for this. I just want to open a box. So, but you really get one shot at it. A lot of this is software that I'm, de-shrink wrapping on film. So I only get
one time unboxing. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. So, I'm opening up a lot of stuff from the 70s and 80s right now. I've been cutting open the shrink wrap and unboxing them. And so I'd like to get as good of a recording as I can for those.
Is the challenging lighting, or is it?
The challenge is my ability for the most part. So if anybody can write in how I can improve that, it'd be good. But yeah, the lighting and shadow stuff, I've been working like with a top-down view, and I've got a little white mat, and that was too bright, so I got a different one now that goes underneath. And just I feel like I have to get back into filmmaking just to get these, because I am wanting to make a good recording, because I do understand that not a lot of people are recording this sort of stuff, and if I am going to rip open the box, it would be nice if I did record it so people could see exactly how things were packaged, because you never know what people might be interested in later. If you're trying to reassemble like a complete in-box version of something, maybe you want to know what order the documents appeared in from the factory, that kind of stuff.
Good point.
Those are the sorts of details that just sort of get lost. So I thought, I've got original things and I've been unshrink wrapping them. I just did Load Runner. And so it's interesting to see, what order did things in this edition of Load Runner. Maybe somebody will care at some point. So I figure if I'm going to record it, I might as well try to get all the details. So anyway, I've been working on that.
Did you say that you posted some of these already?
No, not yet. I'm going to be going back. I've retrieved a few additional copies of games and stuff that I had previously done 1 MHz reviews on. So I'm trying to go back and going to the ridiculous expense on eBay on repurchasing games that I reviewed and gave away. And now I've been getting other copies so I can open them up. So, and then I'll do some sort of batch giveaway thing or something, probably to people that go to Kansas Fest. So if you're going to Kansas Fest next year, there'll be a chance to win additional software. I think I'll do some sort of giveaway just for people there or something.
You're going to get beat up at Kansas Fest for opening all that
probably.
Sealed like, software.
probably. I had somebody.
There he is.
Ivan, I guess you'd pronounce very nicely, and it's a bit of a surprise. So I'm not going to name the game, but an incredibly, hugely, ridiculously collectible game that I'm not mentioning yet. It's going to be a bit of a surprise, but that he had still fully shrink wrapped, that he sent for me to open, unshrink wrap, and record all that kind of stuff and review it for 1 MHz and then send it back to him because it's a very, very unique item. So that's been really exciting. So before I record that one, I want to make sure my setup is in really good shape.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to do something that the host shouldn't do and not put myself last. I'm going to go next.
Do it.
So what's going on with me lately is that, again, it's this PDP-11 stuff, at least on the vintage side, that I bought a book, and the book hasn't shown up yet, and I'm actually getting kind of worried about this. I got on Amazon, and I bought the same PDP-11 assembly language book that I used when I took PDP assembly language in college in the early 80s. Yeah, it was so cool to see that. I was looking for a book on this topic, and I looked at the cover, and I was like, wait a minute. So I went ahead and bought it from one of the used booksellers, through the Amazon. They kind of, do the front for that, and then you buy it through these sellers. And they said it was shipped, but it's been 2 weeks, and I haven't got it. So
did they have a good reputation?
Yeah, they had a great reputation. I usually won't buy if it's less than 99%. Mm. So these guys, I don't know what happened. Did somebody else, you know, did my mail get mixed up with somebody else's in the holiday rush? Or
yeah,
I don't know.
Maybe they're just swamped, hopefully. I mean, hopefully that, you know, that maybe they've just been swamped because of Christmas. And
that happened to me recently. I ordered some stuff on eBay, and what showed up first is the seller sent me this massive box filled with basically looks like every single original manual for Dungeons and Dragons, like 40 or 50 different modules and the Player's Handbook and Dungeon Master, all these. I'm like, this isn't what I ordered a game. Like, what are you doing? And he just had sent me the wrong box.
You say, but you seem like such a big nerd.
I know. So I had to send back like this 50-pound box of D&D stuff.
So, yeah, I'm checking, you know, the mail every day, and it's not showing up. So, you know, you guys, you know, keep your fingers crossed on that. But aside from that, this holiday season's been really busy, and work has been busy, too. So I'm looking forward to a week and a half that I'm taking off over the holiday here.
Nice.
I'm actually going to, you know, take a few days off, and the way the holidays work, I don't have to take many days to get this long vacation. So that's going to feel real good. So that's what's up on my end. David, what about you?
Yeah, I'm just recoup, I guess what I said. Recoup, is that the right word? No. Anyway, I'll restate what I said earlier. Just the books, but which I'm all caught up now. So other than now I need to, like, update the web page to take orders and fulfillment. And I submitted one to Amazon, so that one will be showing up soon, as far as they'll have an inventory of one. My initial fulfillment to them. So,
cool.
But that's done. So just, you know, just things related to the book. And I don't have a week and a half off, but I'll have some time off around Christmas, and things will be slow for the next 2 weeks. So so I'm looking forward to get back to those other podcasts that I sometimes do, you know, not recently, but like the next chapter of Stan Veit, and then, yeah, Classic Computing Video. So yeah, that's it. And I guess, you know, real quick too, when is our... Even on the air here, when is our next show? Are we on schedule, or will the holidays mess us up?
I don't think they will. I think it'll be, you know, if we're on the 3-week schedule, it'll be around the first week of January.
Yeah,
right?
The 7th of January. So is that good for everybody? It should be
good.
It sounds good to me. But since we won't talk to you guys until then, we definitely want to wish everybody a very happy holiday season and a fantastic new year. And, you know, enjoy life while you can, right? Because isn't 2012 the end of the Mayan calendar or whatever?
Yeah, end of the world.
Yeah, so, you know, enjoy that. Maybe that's why we're seeing those inflated prices on these computers. It's like, I got to play with them while I can. No, all joking aside, you know, very happy holidays, happy new year. And that's a wrap. Thanks, everyone, as always, for listening and supporting the show. Please tell a friend or two about it, especially if they're nerdy, you know. There are peeps. Find all of the discussed links in the show notes. You can email the show at feedback@rcrpodcast.com. We don't tweet much, but we're going to start honest. You can follow us on Twitter at @rcrpodcast. So until next time, retrocompute. I'll see you guys.
Bye.